Morning.
Good morning.
Council will please come to order.
Unfortunately, Mayor Adams is out sick, but because of a number of important issues on the agenda, he has requested that he be able to participate by phone. And as required by law, I need to state the following. The mayor is not physically present today due to illness. His failure to participate in today's council session would jeopardize the public interest, health, safety, or welfare. Therefore, unless, there is an objection by any member of the council, the mayor will participate in today's hearing by teleconference. Hearing no objection. Mayor Adams, how you doing?
Well, I'm hanging in there. Thanks.
Well, we're pleased you're able to join us by phone. Carla, before we officially begin today's council session, we have a proclamation, and I've asked Commissioner Saltzman if he would read it.
Okay, thank you, President Fish. This is in honor of Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And the proclamation is as follows. Whereas the city of Portland is strengthened by the diversity of cultures, traditions, and experiences of its employees, and Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Columbia Northwest is open and inclusive with their children, families, and volunteers from all backgrounds, and whereas the need for positive interaction between youths and adults is vital to our community's well-being, and Big Brothers, Big Sisters is creating one-to-one relationships between caring adults and youth, and whereas the worth of such interaction has been documented as an effective strategy to reduce crime and the fear of crime, reduce the high school dropout rate, reduce the use of alcohol and illegal drugs by youth, and reduce the numbers of youth, and especially minority youth, in the criminal justice system. And whereas Big Brothers, Big Sisters represents a local organization that can facilitate increased involvement between adult Portlanders and our community's most disadvantaged youth. And whereas Big Brothers, Big Sisters has extended an opportunity to City of Portland employees to volunteer to enhance their lives and the lives of youth in their communities, and whereas in January 2012, Big Brothers, Big Sisters will recognize these outreach events. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim January 2012 to be Big Brothers and Big Sisters Month in conjunction with National Mentoring Month in Portland, and we encourage all residents to observe this month.
Thank you.
Present you with a proclamation. And have a good to see you.
Yeah. Congratulations. If you'd like to say a few words, just bring the mic up if you would. And all we need is your name, not your address, and take as long as you'd like.
So I'm Shabri Vickers, the Director of Community Relations and Diversity Programs for Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I think this is about the third year that I've got to do this with you guys here and with Mayor Adams on the phone. Hope you get better. Our belief is that through changing perspectives, we can change lives, and that has continuously happened here in the Portland, Oregon area. We serve annually typically 3,000 children, which makes us the largest mentoring agency on the West Coast, and I think that speaks to the citizens of this community and how they step up to really support the children. So again, thank you guys for helping to make certain that we can continue to celebrate National Mentoring Month here in the city of Portland. Thank you.
Thanks for all you do. Okay, Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz. Happy 80th birthday to Colonel Edward Fritz at Cherrywood Village here.
Fish.
Here. Aye.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Adams.
Here.
Okay. We're going to start with council communications. Carla, would you please read item number 26?
Request of Jan Walker to address council regarding the benefit of programs that educate, mentor, and support small business development and growth.
Welcome, Ms. Walker. All we need is your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Jan Walker. My business is Inform Restaurant Accounting, and we provide accounting and payroll services specifically to the restaurant industry. I want to thank you for all of your efforts to support small businesses and to continue this really great work. I'm very grateful to have been a recent recipient of a generous scholarship through the Portland Business Alliance for a one-year SBDC entrepreneur program at the Portland Community College Climb Center. And through this program, I learned there is a big difference between owning a business and growing a business. Like many new business owners, I quickly realized how daily operations and responsibilities could take me away from the decisions and actions I needed to take to grow my business and take it to another level. And I was really learning my way on my own. But through this program, I learned lessons in the classroom, through one-on-one coaching, and encouragement from other small business owners that helped me to refocus my business strategy and learn new business strategies. The opportunity to attend this program with other small business owners greatly enhanced this experience, to hear their stories and their struggles, and to learn together, such an important part of this program. We affirmed each other in what we knew we were doing right, and together we received guidance in areas where we needed help. I know my business would not be on track for growth today had I not had access to this program and the continued support and resources through the SBDC. When small business owners learn to innovate and execute new ideas, they bring in new business. New business leads to job growth, and new jobs bring economic benefit to local neighborhoods and surrounding communities. And I ask that you continue this partnership for your support to small business. Our success really depends on your support, and I thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Carla, would you please read Council Item Number 27?
Request of Silka Akerson to address Council regarding police presence and expenses related to protest. She has emailed and is not able to make it.
Okay. Could you please read Council Communication Item Number 28?
Request of Carl Cromie to address Council regarding his civil rights.
Mr. Cromie, are you here? Okay. That concludes communications. Before we move to time certains, let's take up the consent agenda. Is there any item on the consent agenda that any of my colleagues would like to pull? Hearing none, Carla, would you please call? Oh, excuse me, any members of the public wish to pull any items? Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
The consent agenda is adopted. We have two time certains this morning. Carla, would you please read the first one, Council Item Number 29?
Accept the graffiti abatement semi-annual progress report.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, President Fish. It's my pleasure this morning to give an interim report to Council and the community regarding the additional funding that was generously allocated for graffiti abatement services. Traditionally or historically, during a recession, graffiti tends to go up. And so the council realized this early and allocated additional resources. We have for a long time had one stalwart in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Marcia Dennis, and one in the Police Bureau, Officer Matt Miller. And we have doubled our efforts with our staff, which has more than doubled our community results. So we wanted to present to council today an interim report to let you know how the money has been spent and what the results have been. So I'd like to invite the team to come forward. We have Dennis LeGiudice, our new staff person volunteer coordinator in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Marcia Dennis, our longtime manager of the program, and Officers Matt Miller and Tony Zanetti from the Portland Police Bureau. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.
Who would like to go first?
I guess I will.
Welcome. We just need your name and please
Thank
proceed.
Thank you. Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, other commissioners, I'm Marcia Dennis. For 9 years, I've been the graffiti abatement coordinator for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement in the City of Portland. Prior to that, I was a crime prevention coordinator, very active in graffiti abatement. And prior to that, I was one of the first INR people at the Police Bureau. and ran the graffiti hotline in the 90s after Mayor Katz started the program. I enjoy this job. Seems to have job security in terms of the amount of graffiti that we keep seeing. Other members I would like to introduce today in the audience are members of our graffiti task force, which has also been meeting since the 90s. And specifically, we have Deputy District Attorney Amber Kinney. I've asked people to kind of stick their hands up when I introduce them. The two new, as of October, contractors who do graffiti removal from private property on certain qualifying properties, Jim Carr from Cleanscapes, Robert Berry from the Graffiti Removal Services. We have Matt Smiley and other members of his team from Clean and Safe, which is the downtown graffiti removal program through the Portland Business Alliance. We have people from Crime Prevention. We have volunteers from the Pearl District Graffiti Busters and probably some other folks that I'm leaving out because I don't know they're behind us. But we will start with just a very brief history of the graffiti abatement program prior to the additions that were made in the winter bump. So, Dennis, you want to move that slide on, please?
Sure.
So the graffiti abatement coordinator, prior to Dennis's addition to the program, managed the graffiti hotline, facilitate the graffiti task force. There are two codes that we work with, the graffiti nuisance property code 14B.80, and the graffiti material sales ordinance 14B.85. We have two databases. One is the PDX reporter using iPhones or Droids. There's also the Trackit system that we use for a lot of city properties, and the graffiti tracking system, which is the public portal for public reports. And also, it connects us with a lot of other law enforcement agencies that work on graffiti abatement. So part of my job is to coordinate the cleanup of graffiti all over the city when it's reported. We have the two contracts with Cleanscapes and Graffiti Removal Services now. I work with owners to facilitate the cleanup of their properties, send out abatement notices when those are necessary, to notify owners that they have 10 days per our city code to clean up graffiti. In some rare circumstances, we have obtained administrative warrants to have private properties cleaned up when the owners were not cooperating with us. So we also, next, the material sales ordinance we have worked on as we are able to check for compliance with merchants to make sure that they are locking up or securing spray paints and other graffiti implements and obtaining photo ID. And that's been going on since 2007. Again, we have the two city contractors. And I'm going to turn it over to Dennis to talk about what he's been doing now as the volunteer coordinator.
Okay. Good morning, Mayor. Feel better. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Dennis LoGiudice. I'm the volunteer coordinator for the City of Portland's Graffiti Abatement Program. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about the progress that we've had for the past 9 months. I have it written down, and I would rather go by that because I'll forget something and I'll be mad about that. So just to briefly recap, since April 2011, we have conducted and or facilitated 102 cleanups, added more than 500 additional volunteers through outreach, and formed partnerships with several organizations and educational institutions that have provided diverse volunteers and for cleanup events. These particular organizations include Bridgetown Ministries, Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, Hands on Portland, Catlin Gable School, Concordia University, Heal College, Warner Pacific College, University of Portland, and Portland State University. Although the program has had a volunteer cleanup component, it has been significantly strengthened over the past year. From June to November 2010, there were 31 volunteer cleanups with 575 hours of participation. As a comparison, results indicate that there were 68 volunteer cleanups with 1,166 hours of participation during the same 6 months in 2011, more than doubling volunteer efforts in only 1 year. The wonderful benefit from utilizing volunteers in graffiti abatement is the education component. Volunteers removing graffiti from public properties become more aware of the existence of graffiti as a blight on the neighborhood livability. Since I began in April 2011, we have formed 15 additional livability teams, raising the total to 22 neighborhoods. Livability teams go out at least once a month. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
As a group, and clean graffiti in the public right-of-way. There are also currently 12 additional neighborhoods that I help form, that participate in ongoing cleanups. This brings our community involvement up to a total of 34 neighborhoods that are engaged in keeping their respective areas safe and graffiti.
Where's the
and
map?
Gap.
Go
gap.
Back to that map, please.
Yeah. Where's the map?
Oh, it's
that's what I thought we were getting to.
Graffiti abatement program, that stands for.
Okay, graffiti abatement.
What's that map? There's that map. Okay. So we've created a successful community grants program that is currently administered through our neighborhood coalition offices, funding projects throughout the city. These grants have funded the formation and upkeep of the current livability teams, as well as partial funding of a few dozen legal murals created throughout the city of Portland, turning properties that had previously been chronically tagged for graffiti into positive community-focused locations. Additionally, we have a wonderful partnership with ERCO, which currently holds the 2011-2012 Youth Walking Cruise Grant. They have been seen hard at work throughout the year, rain or shine, cleaning thousands of tags off of telephone poles, neighborhood boxes, newspaper boxes, metal street poles, backs of street signs, and fire hydrants on the main arterials of our streets. The program provides job development opportunities for at-risk youth and also partners with the Mayor's Summer Youth Connect program to provide ongoing opportunities for these youth. I feel fortunate to have the opportunity to work with such a competent team. I also couldn't be more thankful for our partners and volunteers for the surge of commitment in the community to tackle the problem of graffiti in the city. They make this program successful and have made a positive difference in Portland. The expansion of the program and increase in these activities would not have been possible without the focused funding provided by council. So we want to thank you so much for your commitment to addressing graffiti through this program. And
go back to the murals
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we should go back to the murals. There you go.
These are some of the murals that have been funded partially with money from our small grants through the graffiti abatement program.
Right.
So we really revised the way that we are engaging the community in abatement. Dennis is leading these livability teams, which are greatly expanded, and the Pearl District has been a great example of one where people have really taken ownership of their block and their neighborhood, and thank you very much for that. These grants were a component to see if in areas that get tagged a lot, that having art approved by RAC and gone through a couple of different processes could cut down on graffiti. We often hear that providing a free graffiti wall would be helpful in cutting down on graffiti, but the research shows that it doesn't. The art, you skip that slide, please. Get rid of that slide.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Here we show the volunteers doing some of the work. And so the art murals are both beautifying the neighborhood and helping to prevent the graffiti.
A little bit more about the graffiti task force. As I said before, it was started by Mayor Katz. We still meet the third Thursday of every month. We have expanded our network considerably to include regional partners. We have law enforcement participating from Hillsborough to Gresham. We have members included in our network in Salem, Vancouver, all over the region. Friendly Streets has been a great partner. They're a nonprofit involved in public transportation issues and safe streets. They've helped us sponsor the Graffiti Summit the last 4 years. This will be the fourth year that we've held a summit. Next slide, please. We also work very closely with the police and the district attorney's office on dealing with the vandals when they've been arrested. And I think we're about ready for Officer Zanetti's report, if we can get to that slide and he can take over.
Absolutely. Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, my name is Officer Tony Zanetti, and I am the second member of the Police Bureau's Graffiti Investigation Unit. My position was funded by the council last year, and I transferred to the unit in May of 2011. During my short tenure, Officer Miller and I have worked diligently to prove that A, my addition to the unit has increased our efficiency and effectiveness, and B, tangible results can be directly attributed to my acquisition. Investigating graffiti crimes is incredibly time-consuming and requires an officer to divide their attention between several major responsibilities that include investigation, documentation, prevention, arrests, abatement, home visits, training, and education. Statistically speaking, each one of these areas carries equal importance because one cannot effectively impact the graffiti problem without addressing all of these factors. A team of two officers can much more easily handle these tasks without neglecting any one of these areas. Officer Miller has led the fight against graffiti over the last 7 years as the only graffiti investigator for the city. He told me his greatest frustration has been the amount of time he was required to spend behind a computer instead of on the street, making arrests and taking preventive action to curtail the problem. Another roadblock he faced was being required to assist other officers with unrelated investigations while his work remained in limbo. My acquisition to this unit has assured that if Officer Miller is temporarily reassigned to assist with other tasks, I will continue our important investigation work. The community is much better served when their needs are met in a timely manner. In addition to accurately recording our progress, Officer Miller and I took the initiative to document our daily activities so that our efforts could later be reviewed and evaluated. Since this type of information wasn't previously maintained, we do not have comparative statistical data in all cases. A healthy prevention strategy is key to slowing the progression of the graffiti problem, and Officer Miller and I have made this our top priority. By sharing our daily documentation and clerical responsibilities, we freed up valuable time to conduct 30 home visits of known and suspected graffiti vandals who were new taggers or had recently begun reoffending. Where applicable, these visits involved the offender's parents or legal guardians and resulted in commitments from both parties to work together to change the criminal behavior. Visits like these are a proven effective tool in the fight against graffiti vandalism, but were almost totally absent when Officer Miller was forced to triage his responsibilities as solo investigator. As a unit, we made 32 citizen contacts and 59 business contacts for the primary purpose of educating citizens on how to avoid becoming victims of graffiti vandalism and the available methods of reporting such crimes. These numbers completely exclude contacts where citizens called in to report graffiti applications, where we went out and seeked out and interested people. This is a dramatic shift in our preventative strategy because we know the time to educate citizens before they are victimized, rather than at the scene of the crime when a report is being taken. My addition to the graffiti unit has enabled us to conduct 80 follow-up investigations that were initiated by street officers or deputy district attorneys. These investigations helped us identify and arrest suspects for probable probation violations and lead to the discovery of additional graffiti victims who might never have reported the crimes on their own. Our number of investigations almost doubles that of last year's numbers at this point. Of the 67 graffiti-related arrests made by the Portland Police Bureau since May 1st, 2011, 25 of those arrests were the result of our investigative efforts. This number doesn't include the significant number of felony cases submitted by us to the District Attorney's Office for prosecution and the outstanding arrest warrants associated with those cases. 6 undercover missions were conducted over the last 8 months, which resulted in 7 field contact reports and the execution of a search warrant and subsequent arrest of an adult offender who was responsible for tagging hundreds of Portland area locations over the last 2 years and causing tens of thousands in damages. Aside from our investigative responsibilities here in Portland, we regularly train and provide valuable graffiti-related information to other in-state police agencies. Our unit also aided the investigation of several out-of-state law enforcement agencies in Atlanta, Georgia, Victoria, B.C., Boston, Massachusetts, San Jose, California, Union Pacific Railroad, and Burlington Northern Railroads. It should be noted that these numbers were affected by a one-month reassignment to the Occupy Portland encampment security detail and other Occupy-related events. From a purely statistical standpoint, we believe the quality of our investigative work over the last 8 months would compare favorably to that of any police agency of equal size in the U.S. The real question is whether or not we've been effective here in Portland. Our answer to the question is yes. The most significant sign of our success has been the gradual decrease in graffiti written by our embedded old-school graffiti vandals and their crews. The veteran writers that inspire a new crop of up-and-coming taggers over the last 6 years have dwindled over the last 8 months due to arrests and prosecutions. The tone of the graffiti scene here in Portland is much more reserved, with many writers in the community distrustful of each other and fearful of arrest. What we are left with is a disorganized group of younger graffiti writers and crews that are battling to gain status and respect from others in the tagging community. Although the demographic has changed, the potential for damage has not. When I talk to citizens, they tell me the presence of graffiti creates fear in the community and casts a shadow of doubt regarding the safety and livability of the neighborhoods. As a team, Officer Miller and I believe we can positively change this perception through quality police work and frequent communication with our community members. We would ask the mayor and council members to strongly consider the refunding of my investigative position within the Portland Police Bureau's Graffiti Investigation Unit. Our success and gains will be short-lived if we don't continue to pressure these destructive vandals who have little respect for public and private property. Thank you.
Could I ask a question on one of the previous slides? There was something called GTS entry, 20 hours. What is GTS?
GTS is the graffiti tracking system. It's our computer database where we track and record.
So entry into the database, 20
correct.
Hours.
Okay. And that's a database we share with other police agencies up and down the West Coast from Washington to California.
Other questions from my colleagues? Commissioner Fritz, do we have any more invited testimony?
Is anybody else going to be testifying? Would anybody like to testify on this issue?
Has anyone signed up, Carla?
We have one person signed up for public testimony, Pete Colt.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all of your work.
Thank you.
Yeah, just leave that there.
Welcome, Pete. All we need is your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Pete Colt. Hi, everybody. Happy New Year. Commissioner Leonard, thank you. Because years ago, and with a lot of people pushing back, you were the one who instituted the need for people who sell paint and graffiti material to put them behind the shelves. And I appreciate you a lot for doing that. In fact, that's something that should be on the legislative agenda because Portland should be leading other cities in the ability to reduce the amount of money that's spent removing graffiti. If we could lobby Salem to make this a statewide ban, that would be a good idea. And then we should reach across to Gregoire and see if we can do the same thing in Washington. That way people won't be going across the river to buy their tagging material and coming back. Another thing we can do is for $269, we can buy up to 8 cameras from Fry's. Now, I know in my neighborhood on West Burnside at Southwest 20th, there's a little florist there that gets tagged every week. If you set up the cameras there, you're gonna have the ability to see who's doing what. I want to thank NWDA and the Pearl District because they've picked up the ball and have really done a really great job of cleaning up the neighborhood. And Commissioner Fritz, when you got involved in graffiti abatement is when the graffiti abatement program really took off, and I want to really thank you a lot for that too. So thanks. That's it. Thank you, guys. Oh, yeah. By the way, walk through my neighborhood. Monday, for example, from 14th and the Pearl up to 20th, I did Burnside, the north side of Burnside. I also did 16th. Last week, I did Everett from the freeway to 21st. And the taggers that I see all the time, first it was Rerun late last year. Now it's Raw. Women used to be raped in my neighborhood, pulled off the streets because of the mentally ill that come and tag. You know, you cross the 405, you're out of the clean and safe zone. So you have the taggers coming in, and they tag, and this is where we're living, and this is where we're living. I tell you, cleaning up the graffiti has made a dramatic difference in Northwest, from the freeway to 21st and from Burnside to Glisten. So thanks, and thanks, Marianne.
Thank you, Pete.
So I move to accept the report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Carla, would you please call the roll? Some technical problems with the mayor here.
But, I'm sure we're not losing the mayor, really. Would be helpful. There we go. Thank you very much. And thank you for everybody who's here. The short presentation is just a smattering of the amazing work that's being done, both in neighborhood involvement in the police force and with throughout our community. And I thank everybody who is here today and all of our community partners. It's been thank Pete Colt for mentioning Commissioner Leonard's leadership on this when he was in charge of the challenge. We're trying all different kinds of ways to address this problem, and people I didn't realize before I became in charge of the graffiti abatement program how much of a problem it is and why it matters. It's more than damage to private property and damage to public property. It's a way that people feel about their neighborhood, that it doesn't feel safe when other people can come in and without permission do whatever they choose to do. So we are now fighting back. And some of the graffiti now is actually naming some of our officers and our staff here and indicating they're kind of giving up, which is good, because there are legal ways to get permission to do murals, to get permission to do whatever kind of decorations a person might want to do without doing it without permission. And that includes flyers on telephone poles, utility poles. It includes actually the yarn bombers. You know, it's, if you don't have permission, it's graffiti. And it would be very helpful. It's tragic at this time because the property owner is responsible for cleaning it up. Businesses and homeowners who are already stressed by their recession are having to find the money to do the cleanup. So thank goodness for our community volunteers. Thank you to the council for funding the grants, which provide the resources in terms of paint and other supplies. And most of all, thank you to the thousands of volunteers who do the work. We often get phone calls to our graffiti hotline, which is 823-4-TAG, 823-4, the number 4-TAG. If you see graffiti vandals in action, please call 911 and the police will respond. So that's something else. It's all about reporting and about cleaning up as quickly as possible, because that's the way that our partners in the district attorney's office are able to have successful prosecutions. And thank you, Amber, for being here today, that we need to show when the tag went up, who has been doing it, and that when, even though it may be when they go to court, they say this is the first time, if we can document that we've seen these tags over and over again over a period of time, then it's not the first time, it's over and over again. So that's how we need the community to help us with this challenge. We don't have staff, although we greatly appreciate the Clean and Safe staff and Clean Safes and others, who and ERCO, our community partner, who won the grant when we went out for a proposal. We have some assistance. We don't have enough assistance. So if you would like to take care of your block, your neighborhood, please call us at 823-4000 to get anyone in the city that's the number to call for any question you have in the city, 823-4000. Say, I'd like to start a graffiti abatement program in my neighborhood, volunteering once a month. It's actually really satisfying to take ownership of just one mailbox or one area of your neighborhood and keep it clean, because then over time, they go somewhere else. Thank you to my colleagues for hearing this presentation and also for funding these two positions, which makes a huge difference in our capacity to be able to leverage the thousands of hours of volunteer time. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for, I think as Pete Colt said, really sort of revving things up here on graffiti abatement. I want to thank Marcia and Dennis and Officers Zanetti and Miller and our Deputy District Attorney. And all the volunteers in this audience, too, because without you, this would not be successful. But it definitely sounds like it's being more successful than ever before, and I'm very gratified. Also, I live in one of the neighborhoods who benefited from one of those murals in Hillsdale, and I was always wondering who was responsible for that. It's a beautiful mural. I love it. You know, it's like one surprise, like nobody ever thought of that before. But it's really great, and it does enhance the beauty of my neighborhood. So I just want to say good work to everybody. Aye.
Leonard.
I've had the opportunity to work with Marcia Miller quite a bit on this, and I continue to be impressed by her dedication. Appreciate Commissioner Fritz's support of not only her efforts, but I've also worked a lot with Matt Miller on this. So I'm actually very pleased Matt finally has somebody to help him, and Officer Zanetti, who seems to be equally as enthused on the subject. And I appreciate that a lot, and you can count on me insisting that these positions that you two both so competently fill be funded again next year. I think you're doing a great job, and people need to understand not only does graffiti end up being an insult to the neighborhood that it exists within, it also attracts more graffiti and other types of crime. And it's one of the reasons I felt as strongly about it as I did when I was in Commissioner Fritz's position overseeing those efforts. So I really appreciate the work that all of you do to get to the root of some of the crime that occurs in Portland by going after the folks that do this in our streets. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner. Is that loud?
Keep going.
I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her leadership on this issue and for genuine passion. I share that passion as I know other members of council do. As you just heard from Commissioner Leonard, this is a scourge on the city, and it only gets better with the kind of prevention through murals, the kind of having a process in place for people to report it that is managed by Marcia, having the volunteers clean up, like Dennis has managed to quadruple the number of volunteers we have on this, and also to the investigations and law enforcement, my colleagues on the Portland Police Bureau. So this is fantastic. Since we funded it, I've noticed it hasn't gone away, but I definitely see it cleaned up faster, and I see it coming back less often in some obvious places that are repeatedly hit. So thank you all, and look forward to the continued support of this on my part as well. Bye.
Fish.
Well, I agree with all the comments that have been made, and Commissioner Fritz, it's taken your leadership, I think, to take this to the next level. So congratulations. And to Office of Neighbor Involvement, our friends at the Police Bureau, our community partners, ERCO, all of our volunteers, District Attorney's Office, thanks for a great team effort. Aye. Well, the resolution passed, or the report, the report is adopted. Excuse me. We have another time certain. People are free to stay or, as the mayor says, watch democracy in action. Carla, would you please read the title for time certain item number 30?
Accept the report on the 2012 state legislative agenda.
I'm pleased to invite up our crack legislative team, Martha Pellegrino et al., to walk us through our state legislative agenda. Martha, welcome.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Fish, Mayor Adams, and commissioners. Very pleased today to bring the report of the 2012 state agenda for your consideration. With me today, I have Dan Eisenbeis, State Government Relations Manager, and Andy Smith, Senior Associate of Government Relations. As you may very well know, this is the first time the state legislature will meet in an official short annual session, and that's going to be coming this February. So you'll notice that the agenda we're bringing to you is quite short, and it is very much reflective of what we're anticipating. Before we get into the details of the report, I just want to say a few words on how this agenda was developed. We began back in August soliciting input from your offices, from the bureaus, and from the public. In November, we held an event hosted by Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fritz, inviting the community to provide some input into both our state and federal agenda building processes, and had a great session. Representative Tina Kotek came to that and gave us a sense of what she's expecting in February. So not surprising, quite a bit of what we're anticipating is the attention to be focused on the state budget and closing some gaps there. So what I would like to do before I turn things over to Dan is just to acknowledge the great work that's gone into building this agenda. And so I'd like to thank both Dan and Andy. Also, Matt Jaffe from my team is here, our staff associate. Not here today, but someone who's also critical to our efforts, Stephanie Mendoza-Gray, our intergovernmental relations associate, who's worked very hard on the community engagement part of our agenda. And then just a special thanks also to our administrative team, Amy Jolkowski and Leslie Kelly. I'd also really like to thank each of the legislative liaisons in your offices and in the bureaus. They really have provided us with very good information to bring us to where we are today. So at this point, I'd like to just turn things over to Dan to talk a little bit about what we're expecting in Salem in 2012.
Good morning. Again, for the record, Dan Eisenbeis with the Office of Government Relations. I would like to just provide a brief sketch of what we're expecting in the 2012 session. The legislature will convene on February 1st for what will be the first regular even-year session following voter approval of annual sessions in 2010. The session is constitutionally limited to no more than 35 days in duration. Legislative leadership is targeting February 29th for sine die. The session will address both budget and policy issues.
Could you, just for people maybe tuning in for the first time, sure, describe what sine die means?
Sine die means adjournment, the end. So they're leaving themselves a few days of cushion room. The state budget pressures continue, and in fact, the legislature anticipated that when in the budgeting process in 2011 for the current biennium, they created a ending fund balance of $446 million by holding back 3.5% of funding for state agency budgets.
Could you say that again now? They created an
ending fund balance? They created an ending fund balance by holding back 3.5% of state agency budgets, the funding for the approved budget. So essentially what that means is that the legislature said that in order for agencies to implement their approved budgets, the legislature will need to proactively approve that final 3.5% of funding in February 2012 if the revenue is available. The most recent state revenue forecast in November indicated that general fund revenue will be $277 million less than had been projected at the end of the 2011 session, and lottery revenue is down $29 million. The Legislative Fiscal Office has published reduction option lists for state agencies representing 3.5%, 7%, and 10.5%. To the current biennial budgets. That first 3.5% essentially represents the cut that would occur if that holdback of state agency funding is not released. The legislature will receive its next economic and revenue forecast on February 8th, 2012, early in session. On the policy side, the short session will involve far fewer bills than we're accustomed to in long sessions. Each legislator has been limited to two bill draft requests, and each legislative committee, as well as the governor's office and judicial branch, have been limited to five bill draft requests. That equates to approximately 300 bills for the short session, as compared to 3,000 bills that were introduced in the 2011 session. Bills will be pre-session filed and will need to move quickly through the process in order to secure passage given the short timelines involved with the session. So with that, I'd like to turn things back to Martha to begin an overview of the agenda that we have before you today.
Great. Thank you, Dan. What you will see in this report is the agenda broken into three thematic areas. The first is economic development and job creation. The second is public safety and community livability. And the third is promoting government efficiency. So without further ado, we'll just briefly touch on these items and then open it up for your questions. So the first item is support for the reauthorization of OUS bonds for the Oregon Sustainability Center. It is a that is a building where the city has been a partner, and we are going to Salem to support the that request. It's $37 million in revenue bonds. That means bonds that are going to be paid back by the tenants in the building, and not general obligation bonds. So for the next items, I'll actually turn things over to both Andy and Dan to walk through.
Thanks, Martha. For the record, my name is Andy Smith with the Office of Government Relations. Regarding education funding, we will work with our education partners to ensure stable and adequate funding across the education spectrum. On state shared revenues, we will work to preserve the city's share of liquor, cigarette, and 911 tax revenues. And on public safety at liquor establishments, we will oppose legislation that impedes the city's ability to respond to crime and public safety issues at those establishments.
And in the area of promoting government efficiency, the agenda includes items to strongly oppose any legislation that would preempt the city's local authority, and support legislation that proposes to lift such preemptions, and also to monitor state agency budgets and advocate for adequate funding of programs that impact City of Portland services. In addition to the items that are included in the agenda before you, there are a number of items that we plan to monitor and also work on. Such items include proposals to ensure health benefit coverage for autism spectrum disorder, proposals to enhance consumer protections in the foreclosure process, and an effort to add $5 million in funding for preservation of existing deeply subsidized housing.
So with that, I'd like to open it up for questions.
Any questions? Commissioner Saltzman.
I was delighted to hear the support for autism health insurance coverage.
Just to clarify, that item is not included in the agenda that we've presented to you. It is an item that we're expecting will be proposed in the 2012 session that we would monitor in the course of the session.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, Andy, if your former boss, Senator Haas, is involved in proposing something in this session? Or?
Yes. Senator Haas does have a bill at the request of advocates. We think it's going to be a pretty big hill to climb in this short session, given the time constraints of the 2012 session.
I agree. It's a big hill to climb, and I think, as Martha knows, I was initially saying we should put this on our legislative agenda as a priority, because we do have city employees who, as many parents with autistic children, really struggle on a day-to-day basis, and that getting health insurance to cover the many therapies and things like that that can help their autistic children become mainstream is something that's important to me and I think all of us. Unfortunately, it does mean it's more expensive, and I realize before we can go to Salem and advocate unambiguously for this, we probably need to take a close look at our own insurance coverage in this area, and I think that's what I'm going to be doing in the next few months, and hopefully proposing something that we can do for our own insurance, for our own employees. But I am pleased that Senator Haas is moving forward and that this is something we will monitor. And I hope if it does get to the point that we will weigh in and support as well. So thank you.
Other questions? Martha, I have a question that's not directly related to what's before us, but I just wanted to make a request to get some additional information for the council on three things. One, the county has now announced that they're going to do a two-track process in terms of library funding. We had previously tried to gauge what the impact would be on our general fund through compression of the original proposal. If we could get an update on that, the renewal of the levy in May and then the proposed library district in November, because that, as we know, could very well have an impact on our budget. Second is, I think we all read recently that there's some effort being contemplated to put a soda tax on the ballot in November. What caught my eye was that the petitioners are planning to, if successful, use a portion of the money to cover after-school programs and a number of programs which we may actually be thinking about cutting in this budget cycle. So I would like, I think we would all like the benefit of knowing a little bit more about what's being proposed and what, if it is successful, how those dollars would be spent, and for, and in particular, whether they'd have an impact on proposed cuts to Sun Schools or any other programs that are, we're looking at. And the third, since you, in the agenda, you talk about resisting efforts to put preemptions or limitations on our rights to do things locally, I would note that the there is an effort by the realtors to put a statewide constitutional bar on a real property transfer tax. Now, there's a some people have raised the question of why would that be necessary since we are already preempted from considering such a thing. But could we get an assessment from you about that effort and whether there's going to be any organized opposition and sort of how that likely will play out? I think Washington County has a bigger direct impact by that proposed change, but I appreciate more information on that.
Sure. Happy to report back, Commissioner.
Thank you. Commissioner Salzman?
One last question. I know last session, I think it was HJR 11, which was a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow local option levies to, among other things, would allow local option levies like their children's levy to go for 10 years rather than the current 5 years before seeking voter reauthorization. Is there any, is that being discussed at all this session, or is that sort of a next full session type deal?
Commissioner, that was the that was an effort, as you mentioned, that was spearheaded by the League of Cities. My understanding is that they will they're currently revisiting to consider that for 2013.
For 2013.
Right.
Okay. Carla, has anyone signed up to testify?
Yes, we have four people signed up.
Well, thank you all very much.
And thank you.
We'll now take public testimony.
Right. Please come on up. Darvell Lloyd, Lenore Bajan, Pete Colt, and Paul Terdahl.
Why don't all four of you come up if we can make seats? And welcome to the council. Sir, why don't you begin? And you have up to 3 minutes, if you would. And if you just adjust the mic so it's right in front of you.
President Fish, Mayor Adams, if you're still there, city commissioners, I'm Darvell Lloyd, and I'm the chair of the Senior Advisory Council at the Southeast Multicultural Center, Portland. I would like you to urge you to add one more item to your 2012 state legislative priority list under the under the category of public safety and community livability. Regarding the state's senior and disabled property tax deferral program law, revisions to this 40-year-old law last year created widespread, unintentional, and very adverse consequences to thousands of Oregonians, including over 500 homeowners in Portland. We hope you will join our coalition's effort to fix this law for an immediate reinstatement of the of all former program participants, especially those who were disqualified very abruptly simply because they had reverse mortgages. And we need to also lobby for assurance from the legislator that they will be working, not in this legislative session, but in 2013, for long-term sustainability of this, what has been a very popular program, the property tax deferral program. And we need to advocate for broader reform of the tax deferral program, assuring that the program's long-term sustainability without sacrificing the truly needy. And I've you'll have this one-page position statement from our coalition to give you a little more background. We are all going to be down there in Salem on the 20th of January, Friday, between 1 and 5 p.m. when the Revenue and Finance Committee is holding a public hearing. And we hope Portland lobbyists are there too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. Ma'am.
My name is Lenore Bion. I'm 80 years old. I'm one of those 500 people who have been dropped off the cliff on this property tax deferral. I did not get my recertification this year because of the fact that I have a reverse mortgage. There is a simple misunderstanding there was at the passage of this law of the actual particulars of a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages are not things taken out by people with $500,000 who are very well placed. They're acts of desperation, and they're done by people like me who raised two severely disabled children, one severely autistic, and who have very little in the way, nothing in the way of savings. It's all been medically spent down. And I am dependent upon a fixed Social Security income of, it has been $812 a month until this year. For the first time in years, I got a $20 increase. And so now I'm comparatively rich. But I have managed to do this because I planned ahead. And when I bought my house, I realized that I was not going to have much money to take me into old age. I was going to have to really fight for it. And as a result, I spent every dollar I could scrape together planting fruit trees. I bought a piece of property that is one-third of an acre in northeast Portland, right across, by the way, from where the shooting occurred yesterday. And I have farmed it for the 30 years I have lived in that house. I have created, I have chopped up my debris, have recycled everything. It's a model place of making do with what is on the property. I have worked like a fiend on this property. Now I serve to lose it. Because when you have a reverse mortgage, and all of, and the state guaranteed that you could have concurrently a reverse mortgage and the property tax deferral, and I have had it for a number of years. The minute you miss a payment on your state income tax, you are considered to have defaulted on the terms of your reverse mortgage and foreclosure begins. And I am facing that position very rapidly because of the fact that I don't have a lot. Fortunately, I do have a line of credit. It gives me about 6 years to live, or 6 years to live in anything like a situation that I can even conceive of. It before I have totally spent down every cent that I have on the equity of my house. And there are many, many permutations of this. I teach yoga pro bono to elders at the Hollywood Senior Center, and I have put up a notice saying, do you feel like you've been dropped off the cliff with the reverse mortgage legislation? If you need somebody to talk to, call me at home. And I have gotten a tremendous number of calls. I can't offer them any legislative fix. All I can do is listen to them. But that is a big service. And I beg you to do more than just listen to us, but to do something about people who are literally in their 80s and 90s and they're fighting for their lives. This is a very serious situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pete?
Wow. I agree with Lenore. Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. And you guys, what a tough job you have listening to this week after week after week. I don't envy you. I'm here to say that if not in this legislative session, in the next one, I know that the city is fighting to be able to be in charge of speed limits on certain roads. You've probably heard of the Kids Zone Portland, which is, it goes from Congregation Havur Shalom and Beth Israel, First Emmanuel Lutheran, Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, St. Mary's Catholic Cathedral, Metropolitan Learning Center, the Northwest Children's Theater and School, and Jeldwen Stadium. It used to be 100,000 kids a year came into this neighborhood. Now it's with the stadium being bigger, more children are coming in. Here's the problem. We have Everett and Glisson, and 18th and 19th are one-way streets, and they're 30 miles an hour. I live near the intersection of Everett between 18th and 19th, and I see accidents all the time. I've seen accidents in which cars have taken out historic stone walls from the Catholic Church. I've seen police cars, T-bone, other cars, and the police cars were not on an emergency. So it would be a really wonderful thing if the city could have the ability to calm those streets, either with stop signs at every intersection or converting them to two-way streets, which seems to be working really well for downtown Vancouver, where the day after they got rid of their couplets, businesses were saying, thank you, our businesses have increased. People are actually seeing us. The other thing I want to say is I love the idea of the Sustainability Center. I was